This is a true crime in real time update from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
You know, a case is truly haunting when 35 years later, it still refuses to rest. Lyle and Eric Menendez have spent more time behind bars than they did as free men. They were just 21 and 18 when they pumped their parents full of shotgun rounds in their Beverly Hills mansion. A crime so brutal, so theatrical, that it became the courtroom obsession of the early 90s. America watched, transfixed, as the two rich boys, clad in pastel sweaters, wept their way through a murder defense that painted their father, Jose Menendez, as a monster lurking behind the gilded gates of their perfect life. The first trial ended in a hung jury, split right down gender lines. The second trial, a conviction, life without parole. That was the story's ending, until now. Because something's happening, something that, for the first time in decades, is threatening to crack open the ironclad door of their conviction. For the last 30 years, the Menendez brothers have had nothing but time. And time is a strange thing in the legal world. It dulls the public's outrage. It allows new evidence to surface. It reshapes laws. And now, for the first time in over three decades, their lawyers are back in court, arguing that the case the world thought was closed is anything but. The Menendez brothers are fighting for a new trial, and their case hinges on one thing: proof that their father was not just a ruthless Hollywood executive, but a serial predator. Here's what changed. In 2018, a letter, written by Eric Menendez in 1988, a year before the murders, surfaced. It was addressed to his cousin, Andy Cano. In it, Eric described in chilling detail the abuse he said he was enduring at the hands of his father. "I need to tell someone," Eric allegedly wrote, "because I can't keep living like this." Let that sink in. This letter, if authentic, was written before the murders. This wasn't something Eric dreamed up on the witness stand in the 90s as part of his legal defense. This was a desperate teenage boy reaching out to a family member long before the crime was ever committed, and yet it was never presented at trial. It wasn't unearthed by defense attorneys back when it mattered. The cousin, Andy Cano, who might have been able to verify its authenticity, died in 2003. So when this letter finally saw the light of day, the brothers had already been locked up for over two decades. Their lawyers say this is the smoking gun. The document that proves the Menendez brothers' claims of lifelong abuse weren't just convenient courtroom theatrics, but the state of California? They see it differently. The prosecution argues that this letter doesn't change a thing. Their stance is simple. Even if it's real, even if everything in it is true, it still doesn't justify murder. Then, in 2023, another bombshell. Roy Rosselló, a former member of Menudo, came forward with his own allegations. If you don't remember Menudo, they were the biggest Latin boy band of the 80s, the group that gave Ricky Martin his start. And if you know anything about Menudo's history, you know it was plagued by allegations of sexual exploitation and abuse behind the scenes. But what Rosselló revealed was far worse than anyone expected. According to him, Jose Menendez, yes, the same Jose Menendez who was murdered in his home in Beverly Hills, drugged and sexually assaulted him when he was a teenager. This changed everything. Because for years, the public had been skeptical of the brothers' claims that Jose was a violent predator. But now there was someone completely unrelated to the Menendez family saying he too was abused by the same man. For the defense, this was corroboration. It was the piece they never had during the original trials, the testimony of someone who had nothing to gain, confirming that Jose Menendez was capable of the very things the brothers claimed he did to them. And yet, despite the shockwaves this revelation sent through the case, the state of California didn't budge. Now, let's talk about what all this actually means for the Menendez brothers. In legal terms, what they've done is file something called a habeas corpus petition. Basically, it's a legal Hail Mary, a way of saying, we have new evidence and we want the court to re-examine this case. But here's the catch. California has an insanely high bar for post-conviction relief. This isn't like filing an appeal. The court doesn't just glance at the new evidence and say, oh, wow, that changes things. Let's redo the trial. In order for a habeas corpus petition to succeed, the brothers have to prove that this new evidence is so significant that it would have changed the outcome of their original trial. and that is where the fight is happening right now. Los Angeles District Attorney Nathan Hochman is leading the charge against the Menendez brothers. His argument is straightforward. The 1988 letter, there's no way to verify its authenticity because the cousin who received it is dead. The Roy Rosello allegations, they're shocking, yes, but they don't prove that Jose Menendez abused his own sons. And even if he did, they still don't justify murder. For Hochman, this isn't about whether Jose Menendez was a good or bad man. It's about whether this new evidence meets the legal standard for overturning a conviction. And in his view, it doesn't. So what happens next? A judge is reviewing the evidence. If they decide that the new evidence could have changed the original verdict, they could order a new trial. And if that happens, the Menendez brothers would be back in court decades after their first conviction, fighting for their freedom all over again. But if the judge denies the petition, then this path, the path of a new trial, closes forever. And that leaves only two options, resentencing or clemency. Because one way or another, whether it's in a courtroom or the governor's office, the fight to free the Menendez brothers is far from over. Resentencing isn't usually something that happens in a case like this. Life without parole means exactly what it says. No parole, no second chances, no reevaluations down the line. But California's justice system isn't the same as it was in 1996 when the Menendez brothers were sentenced. In fact, it's not even the same as it was 10 years ago. Laws have changed, and those changes might just be what saves Lyle and Eric Menendez from dying in prison. Back when they were convicted, their sentencing was pretty cut and dry. The jury found them guilty of first-degree murder with special circumstances, meaning a mandatory life sentence without parole. At the time, there was no legal requirement to consider their age or abuse history as a mitigating factor. The law simply didn't care that they were 21 and 18 at the time of the crime. They were adults. End of story. But that's not how the law sees it anymore. In the last decade, California has passed a series of laws acknowledging something psychologists and criminologists have known for years. Young brains don't work like adult brains. Science has confirmed that impulse control, emotional regulation, and decision-making skills aren't fully developed until a person reaches their mid-20s. And when trauma is involved, the effects are even more significant. Under today's laws, a case like the Menendez brothers would not be sentenced the same way. Their youth, their abuse, their mental state at the time of the crime, these are all factors that the court would be legally required to consider. And that is exactly why their legal team is pushing for resentencing. California law now allows courts to revisit old sentences in cases where those factors were ignored. Specifically, Penal Code, Section 1172.1, gives courts the power to reconsider excessive sentences for individuals who were under 26 at the time of their crime. And AB 600, a bill passed in 2023, reinforces that principle, stating that courts must take into account a person's growth, rehabilitation, and history of trauma when evaluating their sentence. Lyle and Eric Menendez fit this criteria perfectly. They were young when they committed the crime. They endured extreme abuse at the hands of their father. They've been in prison for over three decades without a single violent infraction. By today's legal standards, a sentence of life without parole is excessive for a case like theirs. And in 2024, Los Angeles County agreed. For the first time in three decades, the DA's office stepped in and said, maybe it's time to take another look at this sentence. Former Los Angeles District Attorney George Gascon, known for his progressive stance on criminal justice reform, formally recommended that Lyle and Eric be resentenced to 50 years to life instead of life without parole. That difference is huge. A 50 to life sentence would make them immediately eligible for a parole hearing. Given the time they've already served, they could walk out of prison within months if the parole board granted them release. Gascon's decision wasn't random. It was based on the evolving legal landscape and the belief that people sentenced under outdated laws, especially young offenders, deserve a second look. The argument was simple. Had this case been tried today, there's a good chance they wouldn't have received life without parole in the first place. For a brief moment, it seemed like freedom was within reach. But then the election happened. Gascon lost his seat as DA, and in December 2024, Nathan Hochman took over. Hochman, a former federal prosecutor, was elected on a tough-on-crime platform, a direct response to the criticism that Gascon was too lenient on violent offenders. And one of the first things Hochman did after taking office was put the Menendez re-sentencing on hold. His argument? This wasn't something he was going to rubber stamp. Hochman wanted to personally review every detail of the case before making a decision. He said he needed time to assess whether resentencing was truly warranted or if this was just another example of a controversial Gascon-era policy that needed to be reversed. Now, everything hinges on a court hearing scheduled for March 2025. At that hearing, a Los Angeles County judge will decide whether to modify the Menendez brothers' sentence. The defense is coming in, ready for battle. They plan to present a full case showing the brothers' rehabilitation, clean prison record, and psychological trauma. They will argue that justice is not about punishing people forever, but about recognizing when a sentence no longer fits the crime. But the opposition isn't backing down either. For Hochman and for those against resentencing, this case isn't just about the Menendez brothers. It's about the precedent it would set. Because here's the bigger issue. Resentencing two convicted murderers in a high-profile case would open the floodgates for other life-without-parole inmates to demand the same treatment. It would raise serious questions about whether past murder sentences should be revisited under today's laws. And that's what makes this so controversial. Opponents argue that changing the sentence of the Menendez brothers could be seen as sending the message that murderers can eventually get a second chance, even in cases of brutal premeditated killings. They worry that resentencing them would lead to a slippery slope, where more convicted murderers start arguing that their sentences should be reconsidered under modern legal standards. But there's another factor at play. The victim's family, or at least what's left of it. Because here's the thing. Most of the people who could object to resentencing are dead. Jose and Kitty Menendez had no surviving immediate family beyond their sons. Most of their extended family has either publicly supported the brothers' release or remained silent. There's no vocal opposition from relatives demanding that they stay behind bars. That puts Hochman in a delicate position. On one hand, resentencing could be justified under current laws. On the other, it could be seen as a political risk, especially for a DA who was just elected on a platform of cracking down on crime. So he's playing it cautiously. He hasn't come out against resentencing, but he hasn't endorsed it either. He's delaying the decision, carefully reviewing the case, and waiting for the March 2025 hearing to make his final call. And that means everything is riding on that hearing. If the judge agrees to modify the sentence, Lyle and Eric could be immediately eligible for parole. Their case would go before the parole board, and if they approved it, the Menendez brothers could be out of prison by the end of the year. But if the judge denies resentencing, then this path closes, and their only remaining option will be clemency. And clemency? That's a whole different fight. Clemency is a long shot. It always has been. For most inmates, it's the final Hail Mary, the last desperate attempt to break free when all other legal avenues have been slammed shut. It's not about the courts, it's not about evidence, and it's certainly not about what's fair or unfair. It's about power, the power of one man. In California, the governor has the exclusive right to grant clemency, meaning Gavin Newsom alone will decide whether Lyle and Eric Menendez ever get the chance to walk free. No judge, no jury, no appeals. Just one signature that could change everything, or leave them to die in prison. For years, clemency wasn't even an option worth considering. The brothers' case had faded into the background of the justice system, their names surfacing only when some true crime documentary dug them up again. But then, new evidence emerged. The resentencing fight began. Public opinion started shifting. And suddenly, what once seemed impossible wasn't so impossible anymore. The Menendez brothers officially petitioned Governor Newsom for clemency, requesting that he commute their life without parole sentences to something that would make them eligible for release. The legal difference here is key. Newsom cannot pardon them. A pardon would wipe their convictions clean, which, politically speaking, is never going to happen. But what he can do is reduce their sentence, making them eligible for parole. That's all it would take. One stroke of the pen, and they'd be in front of a parole board almost immediately. but Newsom wasn't going to make a decision blindly. Instead, he did something extremely rare. He ordered a full risk assessment by the California Parole Board. Now, let's be clear. This doesn't happen often. Governors don't typically ask for this kind of review in high-profile murder cases. If they want to deny clemency, they just deny it and move on. The fact that Newsom took the step of ordering a formal risk evaluation means he's seriously considering commutation. That's huge. The risk assessment itself is no small thing. The California Parole Board is conducting a comprehensive evaluation of the Menendez brothers, examining their behavior in prison, their rehabilitation, their mental state, and, most importantly, whether they pose a danger to society if released. This is where experts, forensic psychologists, correctional officers, public safety analysts, all weigh in. They'll interview Lyle and Eric, analyze their decades of prison records, look at their psychological evaluations, and ultimately make a recommendation. Are these two men still a threat, or have they been rehabilitated? This report will be sent directly to Newsom. It won't be made public, and he doesn't have to follow its recommendation. But he ordered it for a reason. It gives him political cover. If he wants to grant clemency, he can point to the report and say, "See? The experts agree, they're not a danger anymore." If he wants to deny it, he can say, "The risk assessment determined they shouldn't be released." My hands are tied. But let's say the report comes back in their favor. Let's say the parole board determines that Lyle and Eric Menendez have been fully rehabilitated and no longer pose a threat to society. That still doesn't mean they're walking out of prison tomorrow. It just means Newsom has the political and legal backing to grant clemency. And if he does, then the Menendez brothers would immediately go in front of the actual parole board for a full hearing. That's where their prison record, their remorse, their plans for life on the outside, it all gets scrutinized. If the board grants them parole, they could walk free within months. But if Newsom denies clemency, that's it. There is no further appeal, no second chance, no more legal maneuvers. That would be the final word on the case. And that's what makes this moment so high stakes, because clemency for convicted murderers is exceedingly rare. It's not just a legal decision. It's a political bombshell. Granting clemency to a high-profile double murder case would set a massive precedent. The opposition isn't just about these two men, it's about what happens next. If the Menendez brothers get clemency, does that open the door for other convicted killers to demand the same? Will it spark a flood of similar petitions? And of course, there's the public reaction to consider. For decades, Lyle and Eric were seen as nothing more than spoiled rich kids who murdered their parents for money. But over time, the narrative has shifted. The rise of true crime media, the release of new evidence, and the public's evolving understanding of trauma and abuse have all played a role in reshaping how people see this case. Today, there's a growing belief that while what they did was undeniably wrong, their punishment may have been excessive given their background. That shift in public opinion matters. Governors don't make these kinds of decisions in a vacuum. Newsom is watching how this plays out in the media, how the public is responding, how the justice reform movement is positioning this case. He's thinking about his own legacy and his future political career. Because this case is no longer just about two men. It's about whether the system itself is willing to acknowledge that justice isn't always a fixed point, that sometimes, even decades later, it needs to be reconsidered. And in the coming months, we'll find out whether Gavin Newsom agrees. If he does, the Menendez brothers could walk free after 34 years behind bars. If he doesn't, then this story, the decades-long fight for their freedom, ends right here.
The mansion was pristine. Gleaming marble floors. Priceless art. Not a speck of dust in sight. But beneath all that luxury, secrets. Dark ones. The kind that send a chill down your spine when you realize someone's watching. And the housekeeper, she saw everything. The late night visitors, the missing jewelry, the glass of wine that was only half finished before she disappeared. Some say the husband was heartbroken. Others say he was just waiting for the insurance check to clear. But if she had just been prepared, if she had just known the patterns of these kinds of crimes, if she had only subscribed to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, where she could listen to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, ad-free, and before everyone else, she could have gotten out. Instead, well, let's just say her final paycheck is still sitting in the mailroom. Don't make the same mistake. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.